Coming up next on your favorite radio station, it's hour one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, everyone. Happy Future Tuesday. Hey, Mrs. Future. How's it going?
Pretty good.
All right. Beautiful day in town today. A little chillier than yesterday, but not by much.
Yeah, but it's still get out there in the sun weather.
In the 70s here. So, yeah. Nice. Real nice. Okay. Well, here we are in the midst of summer. And what's going on?
There's a Think Local First gathering here at KSCO this Thursday.
Oh, is it here? Or I thought it was in San Francisco.
No, it's here.
Oh, well, there, I guess there's one in San Francisco at the same time.
That's right. Anyway, that'll be during the Dave Michaels show. I'm sure people have been hearing about it, but I just like to let people know. Think Local First is such a great little community. It'll be fun to gather here on the KSCO patio on Thursday evening.
That's it. Oh, I wanted to mention that in the second hour today, starting at 3, we're going to be having in the studio Dr. John Grady, who started a new health clinic here in town. Harbor Health Clinic, with all kinds of new interesting treatments, many of which involving stem cell therapy.
There you go.
And we're going to learn all about what is available with stem cell therapy at this point in time, especially here in town. Mm-hmm. So that will be in the second hour.
Yeah, we're going to spend lots of time learning about stem cells. I can't talk.
Isn't that word homologous?
Homologous? Let's see.
What do you call your own stem cells being
homologous?
Homologous?
Yes. Homologous is when you use your own stem cells.
Yeah, that's really different from humongous. Homologous.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Yes, very tiny. So in the second hour, we'll learn all about that. Meanwhile, it is summer. I thought it was very interesting that Google is releasing 20 million mosquitoes in Fresno.
Google?
Well, one of their...
What does Google have to do with mosquitoes?
20 million.
I thought they were an internet company.
Bacteria-filled buzzing mosquitoes in Fresno.
Oh, boy.
It's a good thing, though.
AI and mosquitoes. I've never thought of those two things in the same sentence before.
You know, these days you just never know what's happening unless you look a little more closely. Yes.
Yeah, I've never searched for mosquitoes, I can tell you that.
It's a company called Verily Life Sciences. It's a unit of Alphabet.
Oh,
the Alphabet
deal.
Yeah. And these male mosquitoes were reared by machines, and they're infected with a bacteria harmless to humans, creates non-hatching dead eggs when they mate with wild females.
Oh, boy. Watch out, female mosquitoes.
Yes.
Had a bunch of males on the rampage.
They're hoping that cutting the mosquito population and the transmission of disease will be reduced because of this.
Yeah, but do they know if those mosquitoes are as cute as the more fertile ones? I mean,
the girls
might not go for it, you know?
They might not. We'll see. The swarm's target is a kind of mosquito called Aedes aegypti, which is a mosquito breed that carries viruses like Zika and dengue and chikungunya. It's an invasive species in California, especially in the Central Valley. We first had evidence of it in Fresno in 2013. So Verily, this division of Alphabet, the Google company, has grown very rapidly, and they've taken on numerous health technology projects. They partner with the drug industry, and they've raised about $800 million from a Singapore investment firm called Temasek Holdings, and it's called Project Debug.
All right, so we've got Singaporeans funding the depopulation of the mosquitoes in, Fresno?
Fresno, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they're hoping that if they can show that this technique works, then it will become a sustainable business, and this will have a big effect on mosquito populations worldwide. And the key is, it's not genetically modified mosquitoes. No. It's bugs and bugs. These mosquitoes are infected with a naturally occurring bacteria called Wolbachia, Wolbachia. So when the infected male mosquitoes mate with wild females, they create non-viable eggs. and that results in a population decline, ideally, over time.
Does this bacteria do anything other than defertilize the males?
Good question. Wolbachia. Let's look it up.
Wolbachia. What about you, Wolbachia?
The male mosquitoes don't bite. That's the good news.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So,
except maybe the females.
Well,
they might bite the females.
Those are the wild ones. The females are the wild ones.
Uh-huh.
But the ones they're releasing are the male ones, and they're not going to bite you.
They don't bite people. Okay.
No. Now, this has been used before, this approach. Of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have been working on the bugs for about a decade.
Yeah, I've heard of this strategy before. I'd never heard of the bacteria Wolbachia before.
Well, this is a California project.
We bet you we have a solution, Wolbachia.
One of Verily's main things is to create robot caretakers, machines that automatically rear, count, and sort the mosquitoes by sex.
Mm-hmm. I see. So they're bots.
Bots.
mosquitoes
have robot rear.
Step over here. Step over there. TSA for mosquitoes.
Yes, I don't think they need as much care as mammals. They're much simpler. So the robots can handle taking care of mosquitoes and raising them in vast quantities for large-scale projects.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be the largest release of sterile mosquitoes to date.
All right. So if you're listening in Fresno, get ready.
1 million mosquitoes.
More mosquitoes than ever, but they don't bite.
That's
right. And hopefully you'll have less than ever after that.
Yes. 1 million mosquitoes a week will be released over a 20-week period across 200-300-acre neighborhoods. Pretty fun, huh?
You heard it here on Dr. Future Show. Running down the dream of less mosquito bites. Here's our break.
All right. Hey, we're playing
this
the show now?
KSEO, where we love to clear our throats on the air.
No, I had the cuff button down, Mrs. Reacher.
Oh, what a relief. I just saw the red light.
Oh, yes.
I heard it.
Okay, well, you did, but hopefully no one else did. Other interesting news. You remember how last week we had Greg Panos on for the last 15 minutes, and one of our regulars, and we were talking about the whole crypto mining phenomena that's happening on the planet right now?
Yes, the craze that's sweeping the nation. How to make free money with computers.
And we talked about potential inflation that would cause the decrease in value of the currency. And
yeah, the main thing we were talking about is the Dr. Future prediction. Thank you, Greg, for noticing this, that the current shortage of video cards to make computers go fast enough to get the edge on mining cryptocurrency would also eventually result in a glut of fast computer cards because crypto mining would become unprofitable.
The headline is, steep decline in cryptocurrency market has miners dumping their GPUs on eBay.
There you go. It happened sooner than we thought.
Bad for miners, good for gamers. So Ethereum, you see, one of the most popular cryptocurrencies, is becoming more difficult to mine. I guess they've changed the algorithm for making it, for mining it. And at the same time, the volatility is happening in this industry.
Yeah, and the volatility is where all the profits are.
And the value
and the
of
losses.
Ethereum, it's like day trading, right? So the value of Ethereum is now less than half of what it was a month ago.
So what are the numbers? Ethereum was up to about 400. Now where is it?
It's currently trading at around 170. Mm-hmm. To 180, and it was as low as 133 over the weekend.
Oh, boy. So that's a lot of lost profit there.
A month ago, it was as high as $400.
Yeah, that's when I heard about it.
Now down to 170 or so. Mm-hmm. So that makes it more difficult to mine because it takes electricity and power and machines to mine. At this rate, it's barely profitable. It's like $4 a month or something for a computer.
A month?
Yeah, something ridiculously low. Let's see, power costs remain constant. Okay, yeah, that means that instead of a net profit of $4,
last month when the prices were high, it was grossing about $5 per day.
Now it's down to a net gain of $1.25.
A day.
That's a power cost of 10 cents per kilowatt.
So you could be losing money on the power.
So it looks like a typical miner would have to wait 6 months before they pay off their GPU hardware investment to make this. So that's a good thing for gamers.
Uh-huh. And why is it good for gamers? How do gamers win?
Because it allows you to have cheaper gaming cards. The gamer cards are what you use for mining.
I see. So these profit-crazed individuals are dumping their cards because they're not going to wait 6 months to make $500. They're going to sell that card right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right now. And $500 for a card, basically.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And these cards, many of which are also good for VR.
VR and gaming and anything that requires the computer to do a lot of work.
Yeah. That whole idea of the volatility of the market has really come home with the actual cost of buying computer hardware in this arena. Mm-hmm. So, Chi, what else can we use high-end graphics cards for besides mining and graphics? What else could they get? Games, you know, besides games and VR, then probably augmented reality and mixed reality would be the next.
I remember the early days of SIGGRAPH, which I know Greg Panos is going to be covering for us in the next week. I think it's coming
August
up 2nd, really
I
soon.
Think. August 2nd. Yeah, we have a story from SIGGRAPH, as a matter of fact, this week.
Right. But I remember when we went to SIGGRAPH in the early 90s and there was a contest to see how much bandwidth you could burn with your computer. Like how many wasted RPMs.
How could you most waste bandwidth?
How could you most waste bandwidth? Right. And these were the early days of animation. So they were coming up with, you know, animation projects and things that
My favorite was having a giant coin, and on the coin you had a dozen videos all running in real time. I said, boy, that takes up a lot of bandwidth to run a dozen videos on one coin. How can you get better than that? Well, they created it so that you flip the coin, and the other side of the coin would have another dozen videos running on the other side of it.
There you go. This is just how computer nerds think. It's like, it's not really about the coin. It's about the bandwidth.
Yeah, what you're able to process.
Right.
Speaking of which, there's a way of creating performances, a new technology that's come out that could also be used for fake news.
Oh, really? So you have a little article on that?
Yeah. This is from Kurzweil Accelerating Intelligence. Obviously, this is the brainchild of Amara Angelica. I recognize her handiwork in this. It's an article on how to turn audio clips into realistic lip-synced video.
All right. So you're starting with a sound file, just sound only.
Yes.
And you're turning that into a video
of
that is synced with it.
Yeah, of that person saying what the sound file is saying.
Okay. Talk about fake news, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. The University of Washington Graphics and Image Lab has developed a new algorithms that turn audio clips into a realistic lip-synced video. And all you do is need a video of that person talking, and you're able to make it look like they're saying what the audio clip is. It uses computer graphics to warp the mouth so that it doesn't look like it's different.
It seems like we come around to this kind of article every now and then. I call it the Max Headroom effect.
Uh-huh.
Because on some level, you are getting a head to talk, and it's a fake. But you're trying to make it look real.
Yeah, you don't want lip sync. Lip sync is really key to believing something is real. And this technique uses a neural network to watch videos of the person that you want to have lip sync. And then it translates different audio sounds into basic mouth shapes.
So the bottom line is fake news is what we're currently calling real people who are reporting news. But eventually, fake news is going to be all news that is happening in all media, because all media will be playing audio files with head bots.
Well, these are actual videos of people that are saying, so you think it's really the person.
Exactly. You won't be able to tell if it's a real person or a simulation of a real person.
Exactly. And as Amara has pointed out, even more perniciously, if you, say, use the Princeton Audio Adobe's Voco software, which we talked about a few weeks ago, that's where you type something and you have the person say it.
See, I think this means the end of authority on the part of humorless people pretending they know it all. I think the fact that all media is going to be suspicious means people are going to have more incentive to think for themselves and stop just taking it at face value from somebody who has more confidence than they do.
Yeah, so much for commentators that
Commentators sounding like your parents that take my word for it because I've got tone 40 and I'm more serious than you, so I must be more knowledgeable.
Thank God we're just talk radio show hosts and have absolutely no authority at all.
I love that. Thank you, Art Bell, for setting us free. We're not the experts. We're just talkers. We like to talk about it and discern what's real from all of this flotsam and jetsam that's flying in the air.
Put it into the public discourse. See what happens.
Yeah. KSEO is great at that. I love KSEO for all the points of view and how much fun we have with it.
So this article that we have on it is Synthesizing Obama's Voice. They do a great job in making Obama say things.
Programming Obama. I'm sure there's a lot of popular uses for that.
I bet the current president would have a lot of fun with that.
Oh, I'm sure. Don't you think there's some programming the current president? There must be.
Well, he did this CNN boxing thing, right? That was obviously fake, but to play with the real thing would be...
Right, you know, right. That's it. Yeah, they just put a box on the CNN.
Should trade our latest technology of fake news with the Russians and get some data from them about how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get somewhere.
Our news is more fake than your news.
Or better fakes. We do
better.
We do the best fake news.
Not more, better.
That's it.
All right. You going to slip something in before the break?
How much time we have?
Just a little bit of time.
Just a little bit of time.
About a minute.
Okay. Well, the other funny thing along these lines was IBM is trying to solve the problem with cryptography.
Cryptography.
Yeah, they're trying to create it so that their clients get their data encrypted immediately as soon as they put their data into databases. So IBM's working on a crypto scheme.
A new way to do what they should have been doing a long time ago already.
It's to battle hackers. They want to encrypt the world. IBM wants to encrypt the world. And so you get their stuff, it instantly gets encrypted, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. I guess only IBM then has the crypto keys to the data.
It seems to me IBM has been responsible for more leaks than just about anybody. I guess it's good that they're getting on top of it.
Yeah.
So guess what?
Time to go.
It's CBS News Break coming up, and a little more sponsor news and KSEO, Dr. Future Show.
All right, we'll see you after the news. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. This just in, literally, just came in over the news wire here. Francis Gabe, creator of the only self-cleaning home.
The only self-cleaning home? Why don't we have lots of those?
Dies at 101.
Oh, well.
She was an inventor. For decades, she did not clean her house, nor anyone clean it for her.
And yet it's spotless?
House was spotless, yes.
Where is this house?
It's in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, we must go visit.
Yeah. She was an inventor who died in obscurity late last year.
It's a woman?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What's her name?
Francis Gabe. G-A-B-E.
Francis Gabe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm just learning about it myself. Between her birth on June 23rd, 1915, and her death, the life of a true American original, quixotic dreamer and accomplished visionary.
Well, Francis Gabe, I wish I'd met you.
She apparently was incensed by house cleaning and that this was woman's chronic lot in life. And she dreamt of a house that would have its own hygiene. It would wash, rinse, and dry itself at the touch of a button.
Kind of like Mother Nature.
Yeah. She says housework is just a thankless, unending job. Nerve twangling. Who wants it? Nobody. And she was saying that as early as 1996.
That's pretty late in the game. 1996, she was saying that. Well, people were saying that way before 1996.
It says 1996 there, but it says she got a patent for it in 1984.
Oh,
so she has been thinking about this earlier.
I guess it took her a while to develop it after she got the patent.
Apparently, she was a friend of Irma Bombeck.
Irma Bombeck writes hilarious.
She did not like housework either, apparently.
Yeah, Irma Bombeck. Didn't she write something like, life is not a bowl of cherries?
Why am I always in the pits?
Why am I always in the pits,
like
right?
That. Life is a bowl of cherries, why am I always in the pits?
Yeah.
Well, Irma Bombeck liked her so much, she thought she should have a new face on Mount Rushmore for her.
Francis.
You know, Rube Goldberg, the Jetsons, Walden, those ideas come to mind with this lady. But she was very difficult to get along with, apparently. She had an adversarial relationship with her neighbors and such. So.
Really?
Yeah.
You think her house cleaning was loud?
Well, maybe it was the cement mixer that she had in her yard. I mean, using it all the time. I don't know, her Great Danes that she kept.
Those both sound very unclean. Yeah. I mean, they could be clean, but a cement mixer in particular doesn't sound like it would ease the housework at all.
No. Well, Mrs. Gabe was happiest when left to her own devices. They had overgrown acres. I guess she wasn't really into cutting the grass, from what I can see. But that's something.
That is the problem with these machines. You know, here we're celebrating her self-cleaning house, and meanwhile, it's just a big overgrown dump, right?
Well, no, the outside. Look.
I think a lot of people think they live in self-cleaning houses.
But,
the stuff is like piled to the ceiling.
Henry David Thoreau would approve of that. But the house, you know, it was a 1,000-square-foot cement house. Cost her $15,000 to pour it. when journalists came to look at her self-cleaning house, they said the house itself was some kind of like gigantic dishwasher.
Just flip a switch and the hoses go wild and then the house is clean.
Yeah, when it's time for the cleaning mode to come in for your house, you have to take out an umbrella. Or get out of there,
I guess. This makes me think of the Flintstones, right? Yeah. I can imagine a self-cleaning house that Wilma Flintstone would just turn on.
It would literally soak everything, sudsy water over everything. And then a second spray would then rinse everything. And then there was a warm air that blew it all dry.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty creative.
And she had drains that would take out, because the floors were slightly sloped, mm-hmm. they would drain out. So you sort of live in your dishwasher.
A lot to be said. However, very few people care about their walls being the cleanest thing in their house. And the windows, maybe, but not necessarily the walls.
But apparently her sink, toilet, and bathtub were also self-cleaning.
Hmm.
All of which we still don't have today.
Hmm. To the best of our knowledge. Perhaps some people do.
She kept her bed closed dry by an awning pulled over the bed before the cascade began.
Upholstery. She has to hide from the maid. Yeah. The robot maid is coming to squirt her down.
Upholstery. Well, the whole house would start spraying, right? So the upholstery was waterproof fabric. It kind of looked like heavily textured naga hide from the descriptions.
So the whole house was perfect for cleaning, but really uncomfortable to live in. Uncomfortable to sit in.
If you don't mind everything coated in plastic and knickknacks being displayed behind glass, I guess it's okay.
I guess you got to pick your preferences.
Papers in watertight plastic boxes, books in waterproof jackets. Better not leave your phone out, I guess. Electrical outlets were covered.
Yeah, what did she do with her cell phone? I bet she had to replace them more often than most.
I would imagine her box, her house, would be something would be on a tour guide of Portland. Weird Portland.
We've got the Winchester Mystery House here in San Jose. They've got the Portland self-cleaning dishwasher house.
Let's see what happened to her. Let's see, death, survivors, grand. Her property was sold some years ago, though the house still stands. There's kind of a hippie guy living there, and he likes the place.
Yeah, he probably just doesn't even pull the cover over his bed when the house starts cleaning. He just like takes it like a shower.
I doubt if it's still working. I doubt it, but anyway, that just came in.
Thank you.
Francis Gabe, creator of the only self-cleaning house.
All right.
Dead at 101.
Well, thank you for the thought.
Yeah. So I just wanted to complete a thought on this article on IBM deciding that their solution to crypto was to take all your data and encrypt, put it into...
We will encrypt everything. Encryption. We will have one ring to rule them all. All cryptography will come into IBM and only what we say will go out.
Sounds like Silicon Valley, the TV show.
They do plan to charge people lots of money to encrypt all their data.
Oh, boy.
They say about $50,000 for the average database.
Would you pay $50,000 to encrypt your data?
Well, it depends on how important it was, I guess. You know,
I think if my data can't handle its own freedom, it doesn't deserve it.
Okay. They say that way too much information is just stored as text. But universal and pervasive encryption could help ensure that even if hackers broke into a company's network, any information they found would be impossible to decode. That would be a huge step in protecting a much larger body of information.
I hate the whole concept of encryption. I hate the whole idea that we have to make things so difficult to discover, unlock, hide, use, that it's beyond our reach. This is the mentality of the ultimate elitist, of somebody who wants so much control that no one else can have any.
Well, Mrs. Future, law enforcement would agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because all this encryption frustrates law enforcement, mm-hmm. which in recent years has been waging battles with Silicon Valley over encryption technology. Like, remember the whole Apple case?
Yeah.
With the Justice Department last year.
I remember Apple saying, no, we're not going to decode that iPhone. It would be bad for all our customers. And then John McAfee said, pay me, I'll do it.
Well, the company, the Justice Department wanted Apple to help break into an encrypted iPhone used by one of the shooters in the San Bernardino attack. Mm-hmm. Remember that? And Apple refused, saying that the developing tools to break encryption would undermine its customer security, particularly if those tools fell in the wrong hands. I said, you know, it's one thing for the FBI to have it, but what if those tools got out on WikiLeaks and everybody had them?
Are there any hands that are trustworthy?
Like what
enough?
Happened to the NSA?
Mm-hmm. That's it. See, the NSA is like, trust us. We're protecting you for your own good.
And then all their tools
get. We lost our special tools to the hackers, and we can't find it anymore. They're better hackers than we are.
Yeah. So you get careful like that. The Maginot Line comes to mind. The technology can be used either way. And once again, we have to look at it from that line. If IBM encrypts everything, then what?
See, I can't help it. I'm just a cut-to-the-chase kind of person. Can't we live in a world that is more moral at its core rather than a world where we expect everyone to be a criminal and we have to protect ourselves from everyone trying to violate us? We are so bass-ackwards in our priorities. We are so missing.
Well, I would agree that most...
We're so afraid of the wrong things.
Most rules are for the 2% that don't follow them.
Yeah, so let's have less rules and only those 2% have to follow them. And everybody else gets to be free.
And how do you ascertain who's who and who's who at the zoo?
Well, you don't want to be on that list of the 2% who have to follow the rules.
No.
You want to be the other people.
Yeah.
I say the minimum number of rules possible, and people shouldn't have to follow the rules if they didn't even know it was a rule, because they should get to agree first. This is like every teenager feels this way about their parents, right? So why are we employing everyone to act like parents who don't have a sense of humor? Can't we come up with a better routine for civil harmony? It doesn't have to be civil obedience. It should just be civil compatibility.
Well, if you weed out the 2% before, you know, before they're in the mix, then that's another possible.
There you go. So let's just stigmatize the 2%. If you get labeled as 2%, all your civil rights are revoked and everybody else is
you get moved to your own to society where the 2% live.
Ooh, like a leper colony.
You can only drink 2% milk and all things 2%. Everyone else is free of you and your wily ways.
Food for thought. All right. How about less rules for the free people and more people who are actually free? How about that kind of world? How do we get there?
Keep dreaming, Mrs. Future. Keep dreaming. Yes. Hold that dream.
Time for a break. Back to Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Another story just in during the break. Thank you, Richard, for this one. Big article in The Verge. Disney wants to build a Westworld for Star Wars fans. A luxury space hotel in a galaxy far, far away. So this is the news of the D23 Expo going on down in L.A. right now. That's where Stan Lee got all the accolades for being one of the top guys in the comic world. Well, Disney has offered a few details about its themed expansion, Star Wars Land.
Mm-hmm.
The Galaxy's Edge, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they also plan to have an immersive themed hotel set in the Lucas universe, in the Star Wars world, that will probably have androids in it. Audio animatronic
so you can go to the Star Wars bar and pick a fight with an android?
Well, it'll be a hotel. Yeah, a Star Wars themed hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks interesting. I mean, it's an environment that could be the future of hotels, the way they want to look at it. It'll probably look like a starship in some respects.
Cool.
It'll be a place where guests can have interactive experiences as part of some kind of storyline connected with that universe. Invite you to live your own adventure in the hotel. I've heard that they have the technology for theme parks now to personalize it so that because of your registration, your badge that you carry with you, the animated characters know who you are and they can address you personally.
Oh, boy.
So Princess Leia comes up to you. She knows how to address you by your first name and such. So this could be very interesting. This will be...
They're going to ask us to chip ourselves in one generation.
Yeah,
I know. It's coming. It's going to start with Princess Leia.
Well, you'll carry something around your neck initially, or you wear something like that. So you'll be able to wear...
Well, it must always be optional. Otherwise, it's slavery. But yeah, all you have to do is get your own cool little Star Trek badge. I'm up for that. I don't mind if people opt in to having every robot in the world know their name. Some people need that kind of recognition.
Well, I hear
some
they already
need
are.
Validation.
Already, look, check a new Disney hotel and guests are given an RFID-powered magic band that serves as a room key, parking ticket, ID, credit card.
And RFID chip that you can embed in your neck. And then they will always know who you are.
That's a
and
little...
And doors will fly open for you into your prison cell.
I don't know. I think you should be an immersive environmentalist. Start protecting us from these worlds, Mrs. Future. Obviously, you see the danger.
I'm not the only one.
Yes. Oh, they're also building Pandora. I believe it's open now.
Mm-hmm.
Pandora is the new park, Pandora, which lets you visit that world and the Harry Potter world we've been to at Universal Studios.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see more and more of these fantasy worlds come to life. So Galaxy's Edge will be pushing the boundaries of what's possible in this thing. But thank you, Richard, for that piece. It's an immersive hotel concept that will possibly be, if it's successful, will be used in many other hotels as well.
Cool. Oh, well, I'm always up for new ways to have fun. Always.
Okay, and also in terms of, I guess you wouldn't call it just fun, but some interesting medical news. There is some research going on projecting a visual image directly into the brain, bypassing the eyes. Directly into the brain, which will eventually allow the blind to see or paralyzed to feel touch.
That's very interesting. How can an image be projected into the brain? The brain doesn't have a screen.
No, but what they're doing, this is a DARPA grant, a $21.6 million grant to the University of California at Berkeley. It's one of the DARPA's Neural Engineering System Design Group. And they're announcing this week that they're planning to develop implantable, biocompatible neural interfaces to compensate for visual and hearing deficits.
Okay, could you repeat that again?
Implantable, biocompatible neural interfaces for hearing and visual deficits.
Right.
Okay, so you're able to
see. So they want a little neural patch that tells the brain how to see.
Well, first of all, we need to see what happens when you're seeing. You have to read right the brain. We have to see what the brain is reading through the senses and what it's writing, what it's putting out there into the world. And to communicate with the brain that way, the team will be inserting a gene into neurons that make them fluorescent, fluorescent proteins, which flash when a cell fires an action potential. So this allows you to see your thoughts. As you're thinking, neurons light up, okay? And then we have a little camera that's implanted in the brain that sees where the flashes happen, which parts of the brain are active as you're thinking things.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a three-dimensional map of your thoughts in light, in light patterns.
Interesting. So we have a genetic code that puts a light onto a neuron.
Well, no, it makes it so
when
that
when the neuron is used, you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have sensors that are picking up that light. And
a light
mapping
field,
the pattern.
A miniaturized light field microscope.
Mm-hmm.
It's mounted on a small window in the skull. And it peers through the surface of the brain and it can visualize, it can see up to a million neurons at a time at various depths as they flash on and off.
Huh.
So we start to see the patterns in the brain as it does its thing. And this microscope is based on this revolutionary field in photography called light field photography.
Light field photography.
And that captures light from the environment through an array of lenses that can reconstruct the room where everything is in focus. There's no lenses that focus. It's just picking up reflections of light and recreating them as a three-dimensional construct.
So light field light beam is a laser that's giving us feedback information about what's in the room.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a laser, but it does. It's reflecting, picking up the reflection of light from everything in the room. Okay, and then recreating it in a three-dimensional matrix. So you see that. There's a couple of light field cameras that are out there now. So we'll be able to read the functions of the brain, and then eventually we'll be able to write to them through...
Through some kind of reverse
device.
Engineering
yeah, reverse
of this...
We flash the neurons
mapping.
For them to do.
Right. First, we're going to just see where the lights are going off and map it. Then we're going to figure out how to replay the map that we saw so that the brain knows what we're looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, and so visual images that mean something to the brain directly. we'll be able to do that. And that will, anyway, right now they're at the level of working with mice, basically. It's at the level of mice for doing this kind of research.
Well, it makes me think about the way that Pat Flanagan described the neurophone, and his fundamental insight with the neurophone was that the hearing that was created was through a brain pattern electrical process rather than a sound process. You know, sound is vibration at a certain speed, whereas the brain is sensing that sound and making some kind of brain pattern. So we're talking about a very different language than the original source. The language of light is showing us the picture. We're coding that into something that's basically binary, that's on off, and then we're using that to understand the neural network and how the neural network is translating that information. So we don't have the actual vision. We have a pattern that was created by the vision.
Well, we're rendering visible what was invisible, which is neural firings. Mm-hmm. You know, neural firings fire in sequences. And our scientists figure that if we look at the patterns of neural firing, we'll be able to ascertain information about what those firings are all about. Whether or not they represent an action to move a hand or to visualize a room or to make a plan to go somewhere. All these different thoughts have complex patterns that occur in the brain. And by trying to render them visible using optogenetic technologies, we can perhaps begin to reverse engineer them and feed information directly to the brain without having to go through the optic nerve.
A new language of light.
Yeah. So we can send images directly into the brain, or thoughts or ideas. Hmm. Anyway, DARPA, the Department of Defense, naturally is interested in such things.
Yes.
We want to put some money into
it. We want to program the robots and maybe the humans. Let's learn how the technology works.
So this will allow the blind to see and the paralyzed to feel. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the beginning.
That's good. That right. You want to replace functionality where it's not working and then use it in whole new ways.
So if you want to know more about that, check out our links page, drfutureshow.com/links, and you'll know more about what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. There. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yes, and I see we do have somebody calling in, and I want to tell people we're always open to phone calls at 831-479-1080. We're just down to the last couple minutes of the show here.
Okay, I wanted to mention of ROST 128 before we go. You might have heard about that. That's that mystery radio signal detected from a red dwarf star just 11 light years away.
Can't say that I heard of that one, Dr. Future.
Well, George Norrie was talking about that last night. You know, it's not like totally
sleeping.
Out the lunch here.
Start over. So we have a red dwarf that's sending a message 11 light years away.
It's a very peculiar pulses, appear to be unique to that red dwarf. And they seem to be similar nearby stars that don't have those kind of motions on them. So something weird is going on. Then we have Arecibo Observatory. That's the biggest dish on the planet that we have looking at this in a bid to identify what's going on. And they now have the Allen Array online with that. That's an array up in Northern California to also analyze ROS 128 to see what these peculiar signals are. In case you're curious, technically, they consist of broadband, quasi-periodic, non-polarized pulses with very strong dispersion-like features.
I'm so glad you explained that. I'm
broadband,
so clear now.
Broadband, quasi-periodic, non-polarized pulses. Okay? So anyway.
What I say
Ross 128, keep an eye. They should have a report by the end of the week as to what's causing this. Is it a satellite interference? Is it some nearby thing in our star that's affecting it? Or is it aliens? We don't know. We'll see.
Well, we'll find out, and we'll let you know.
ROS 128. Keep an ear open for that. Okay, next hour, stem cells, details, a local clinic. Find out here. Dr. Future Show.
All right. This is KCO, Santa Cruz, and the Dr. Future Show. We'll be back after traffic and weather with Dave Michaels, a little more CBS News, a few more sponsor messages, and then Future Show with our guest from the Harbor Health
Grady, Dr. John Grady,
Santa Cruz.